You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Muses and Stuff. This is the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves. They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted, and they made no apologies. Welcome. Today we are talking about Anita Pallenberg. And with me, I have my good friend, Lynx O'Leary.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's always so much fun doing this with you.
I'm always so excited before you come over. And what I love about when you come over is that you tell me the story. So I get to take a little break. I get to sit back. I don't have too many notes in front of me. And I just get to listen and learn something because I truly don't know much about Anita, except that I recently watched Performance at your suggestion, and I know that she was involved with the Rolling Stones, and because of your podcast telling me about Mary and Faithful, I know that they were friends, and then she had a relationship with Keith Richards.
Yes.
So those are the bare bones, that's what I know, and that's about it.
Okay, well, I'll fill in the rest of the blanks there for you today.
Okay, fantastic. So I watched Performance, and I did take notes.
Oh, good. I'm so excited to hear.
Okay. So, I went into the movie not knowing what in the world I was seeing. The cover of Performance is two pictures of Mick Jagger. The one at the top is Mick, who looks like himself. Mm-hmm. And then the one on the bottom is Mick with slicked back hair and a business
professional
suit.
Professional Mick.
The professional Mick. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, I don't even think I read the back of it, but I popped it in. Actually, no, I didn't watch the DVD that you gave me because my computer was like, meow, 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 now, now. And I was like, okay, fine. So I had to find it online. So I started watching it online, and I'm watching it. And right off the bat, I'm just confused. I'm totally confused. So thoughts that are running through my head is who is this main guy that they're showing? Mm-hmm. What kind of a name is Chaz? Why is everybody so angry? Where is Mick? Where is Anita? Am I watching the right movie? Who are all of these unattractive men, and why are they yelling at each other? So then I skipped ahead a little bit to make sure that I was in the right movie. And then the first, I'm pretty sure it's the first scene with Anita and Mick. It's a bedroom scene.
Yes.
So I go, okay, I have found the right movie. And so I'm watching it and I'm like, sweet. So Anita, I'm just, okay, I see her and I'm like, sweet. Oh, yeah, she's hot for sure. Mm-hmm. And then she picks up this video camera. And guys, like, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this movie, sorry. It came out in 1970. It was shot,
it was filmed in like 1968. 60s, yeah.
Came out in 1970, so, I mean, pause the podcast, go watch it, come back, but essentially, like, I'm gonna ruin a few things for you, or, I don't know, maybe
it's still worth seeing.
It's still worth seeing. So she walks up to the bed, and it's like a, you know, canopy, and it's just very...
Very 60s
sensual.
Yes.
You know, the music is... hilarious, but she's got this video camera, and then she walks onto the bed and she sort of like takes their bed sheets and clothing, and then I see that there's another person in the bed, and I'm like, oh, who's this other person in the bed? And I'm like, oh, it's a man. And then I was like, no because no, it's a woman. And I was like, but no, but is it? Because then there was another angle and I was like, but is it another man? I was like, either way, like, I'm in. I don't care who it is. But, I should have started cluing in right away that that was going to be one of the main things movie was the, like, is it the... Yeah. So then I realized that it was, like, a young woman and... and then I was watching it kind of in the middle of the day, so there was a bit of a glare on my computer, so I went under the covers. So I had my computer on my lap, I was under the covers, and then all of a sudden Anita and Mick were under the covers, and I was like, oh my god, I'm under the covers with them. And then it just
it's very sexy.
It was so sexy. And then just like her licking his lips, and then I was like, okay, I'm in. So, but I did give it a pause, and then I went and I read the synopsis of it, because I was kind of confused.
Yeah.
But then I read what was going on, and I went, oh, okay, I see what's happening with this movie.
At the very basic level, it's like a slightly gangster film about a guy going undercover trying to hide out from some scary people who are after him, and he ends up at Anita and Mick's place. And Mick is, I guess, a has-been rock star who's lost his way. And through some psychedelics and other sort of drugs, things start to get a little...
Well, Chaz starts tapping into that other side of himself that I think, you know, was always there. And so the reason why the men at the beginning of the movie were so angry and yelling at them at each other is I think that they were trying to show that when you place these expectations on men to be this manly man, and then that's all that they can be, and then they have to live up to that, they can become quite resentful and quite angry. Whereas Mick was that kind of, he was able to do what he wanted to do, dress how he wanted to dress.
Yes.
He was able to play with gender, and that was the thing about him that made him so attractive and had such sex appeal, is that he... like, the women wanted to fuck him, the men wanted to fuck him, but they were able to just be like, well, he's a really talented musician and singer, and so I'm just, as an artist, but probably most of, you know.
There's so many levels to this film.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in the scene where Anita, what's her name in the movie?
I can't remember.
Yeah. I know that Mick is Turner, but it's only because I only know that because I read about it. So she's putting the wig on him, and she puts this sort of robe, on
women's kind of robe, maybe.
And then he starts having this freak out, and he's like, you pervert, like calling her a pervert. And he's like, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm normal. And it's this, that, like, that pressure to be normal and to be this kind of stuff. So it's almost very restricting, and how that can lead to Yeah, like anger and just these men. And then when they aren't able to live up to these expectations of being these like providers, these men, these like business, whatever. And then there's that scene where Mick is dressed up as the businessman.
Yes.
And then he gets all of the other men that were yelling at the beginning all, you know, like naked and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is 1970 that this is coming out.
Yeah.
So they didn't have words like non-binary or even transgender.
That's right.
So I picked up this issue of National Geographic, which is the gender revolution, right? And so if you see on the cover here, like it's 8 people, and they all have a sort of label for them. And it's like, okay, male, androgynous, transgender male, bigender, transgender female, transgender... Oh, another transgender female and intersex non-binary. And I think that it's like now these things are starting to really...
Yeah, be discussed publicly and in a more straightforward kind of way.
Yeah, whereas they were doing it in this completely... I mean, they were discussed. They weren't discussing it, but...
They were kind of like showing it and letting you sort of decipher what you want from it. I'm sure there are people who watch that movie and... don't look deeper than the, you know, the base, but that film is meant to, you know, provoke thought. And I don't know how you could watch that and not walk away thinking about it for days. Like there's just so much there. I've watched it so many times and even still I'll rewatch it and pick up on things. It's amazing. And that film has such an interesting backstory too, because behind the scenes, that movie had a huge impact on everyone who was in that film. For Mick, it did open elements to him. He sort of picked up some Turner-ness in his real life.
He was gorgeous with the eyeliner and the makeup.
He never looked more beautiful, absolutely. And Anita, apparently with every role she did, she would... pick up that personality, and she never really played characters whose personalities you'd want to pick up. The most interesting one though is James Fox, who plays the gangster who sort of is on this road of self-discovery. Filming that affected him so deeply that he had a mental breakdown during the filming.
Whoa.
And he had to be hospitalized after, and he didn't work again for a while. Like, it really messed him up on a psychological level. Donald Kamel, who directed it, Keith Richards called him a master manipulator. He knew how to work everyone, and he had no qualms about taking them to places that maybe wasn't, you know, right for them to go. And just a little offshoot here. Nicholas Rogue was the cinematographer, and he did The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie, which is another mind fuck, if you will, of a film.
Confession, I haven't seen it.
No?
Okay, I'll watch it. We'll discuss next time we're together. But then, okay, just like wrapping up this performance thing, but even just like having them in the bathtub, the three of them, Anita, Mick, and then whoever the young woman was that was kind of
Michelle
androgynous. You know, it was and Mick's hair is longer than hers. And he's just like, should I wash my hair? And he's just very... you know, soft-spoken and almost, you know, really like with these more traditional feminine qualities. And
he's almost more femme than Anita is in the film. She's like the hard one. She's like what you kind of expect a man to be. Or...
And then when Chaz is with the young woman, he's like, you're skinny. You're like a little boy. So he even comes out and says it, and because you can see that Chaz is sort of like... I don't even know what you would call it, experimenting, questioning, whatever, mm-hmm. with his stuff. So it was, I'm so glad that I watched it. But, you know, I was walking down the street the other day, and I saw this kind of tall, skinny, hair to sort of like shoulder length person putting money into a parking meter, and I couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. I was just like, mm-hmm. I could kind of go either way. But that, it's that sort of, like, I was attracted to that. And so as I was walking, I had to look back and just go,
what's happening?
I think because I've always been able to freely express that part of myself. I've never had to keep it under wraps. I've never had, even though, you know, raised this way, my mom has often no bad vibes with my mom about this, but very much like, as in, women should be dainty, and she said words like delicate and this kind of stuff, whereas, you know, you also need to balance that with strong and tough and these kinds of things. But I didn't have these. I never had to fit into any kind of anybody's
mold
of what they want my gender to be, and so and I never, and yeah, I never had to. I've never been attracted to the hockey player, the athlete, the man's man, and, you know, it's just different things for different people. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because, you know, my father had a very like sensitive and artistic side to himself, and then but could also, like, you know, fix a car or whatever, you know, having the two. And then one of my brothers was very artistic and sensitive, and then the other one of my brothers was very more traditional male, so I got a lot of the
saw all sides.
I like all sides.
Yeah, and you're right, like, this is one of the first times in history really where it was started to be not only just shown but like almost celebrated. I do feel that film could have only been made in Europe, though. Like, there's, I don't think the States in the 68 were quite ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. But it was like through these people and Bowie and everything where androgyny started to become an acceptable expression, so to speak.
Yeah. So before we move on, I just had two more questions. One, was that Anita's real accent? And two, should I get bangs like her?
That is Anita's real accent. Oh. She has this Italian, German, British sort of mixture going on. She kind of lived all around. So, yeah, that is her. It's very sexy.
Oh, super sexy. Yeah. And the answer is no, I shouldn't get bangs.
I just got bangs. So
they look fantastic. Oh, they look like beautiful. Plus, like, you've got this long. What color is this now?
Like purple pinky.
Purple pinky hair. Yeah. No, it works. I told myself, Shanti, no, you're never gonna get bangs again.
I was inspired by Jane Birkin and Francois and all those '60s women.
Gorgeous,
Anita, absolutely
gorgeous. Yeah. Okay,
all right.
I'm ready.
All right.
Are you guys ready at home?
So Anita's got a really awesome story. She was born January 25th, 1944.
That's my birthday! I was born January 25th, 1988!
That's amazing.
Whoa! Okay. I'm in.
Well, and it's her birthday coming up soon. And yours. Mm-hmm. So she was born in Rome. I'm not really sure exactly how long she lived there. I do know she kind of... her parents were Italian and German. Her rock and roll journey sort of begins in Germany in 65. She was there modeling. The Stones came through, and she met them backstage at one of their shows in Munich. She was very popular back then. She knew all the IT people. She, anywhere she wanted to go, she was there, you know, and the life of the party. So she met the band. Her and Brian hit it off. Marianne thinks, because at the time, Brian sort of liked to tell the world he was the leader of the Stones, he thinks that might sort of be why Anita was initially attracted to Brian. Either way, they hit it off. They started sort of casually dating. In a few months, Anita decided to move to London. All through this, she's filming, you know, random sort of cult films in Germany and lots of modeling. I'm going to quote Marianne here. How Anita came to be with Brian is really the story of how the Stones became the Stones. She almost single-handedly engineered a cultural revolution in London by bringing together the Stones and the Jeune Doré. The Stones and these hip aristos were a perfect match for each other. The Stones came away with a patina of aristocratic decadence that served as a perfect counterfoil to the raw roots blues of their music. It transformed them from pop stars to cultural icons.
Holy moly.
Yes. Anita really was on the mark. She knew how to dress, the right people to be with. She inspired not just the Stones, but almost a whole revolution in London. And not just Marianne, but a lot of people give her credit for this. She was like...
And by doing what? By...
Just being herself, really. Mm. Yeah.
So just being encouraging and fun and just kind of...
Finding the right people, bringing the right people together.
Oh, that's it. I like that. Mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed that. Being like, hey, do you know this person? Or sort of having like seeing similarities in people, like say, because I've lived on the East Coast of Canada and then like living in Toronto, being like, hey, do you guys know each other? If not, you should like plan your tour together. Or even when I was living in Peterborough and actually setting up tours and stuff, or not tours, but shows and things like that, thinking like what bands would be good with what bands so that they could travel and tour with each other in the future.
Yeah, and Anita was like on the mark with music, cultural writers, directors. She was like hanging out with Fellini one day and, you know, the Stones the next. And bringing...
Who's Fellini?
Federico Fellini, 8 and a half?
Uh-uh.
He's probably the most famous Italian director from the 60s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll show you some of his films.
Great.
Yeah.
I think we need to have a night.
Absolutely.
A movie night.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm all for it.
Doll night.
All right. So just to give you an idea of Anita, this is another quote from Marianne's book, Faithful. She was the most incredible woman I'd ever met. Dazzling, beautiful, hypnotic, and unsettling. Her smile, those carnivorous teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obliterated everything. Other women evaporated next to her. I was utterly in her thrall and would have done anything for her. Mm. She just had this power over people. And Keith Richards, in his book, Life, he says, my first impressions of her was she was strong, extremely bright, fascinating, let alone that she was so entertaining and such a great beauty. Very funny, cosmopolitan beyond anyone I'd ever come across. She spoke three languages. I loved her spirit, even though she would instigate and turn the screw and manipulate. She wouldn't let you off the hook for a minute. Anita, sexy fucking bitch, one of the prime women of the world. So she,
hot damn.
Yeah. She was very magnetic and alluring. And
well, that's it. And that's what, you know, something that I touched on last week. Yeah, a lot of these women physically were gorgeous, beautiful models. Mm-hmm. And, you know, seeing her in performance naked, I couldn't help but be in awe of body. And even, you know, it's like just natural and, you know, like her full breasts, just being like, wow, what a beauty.
Yeah.
But that's it. You have to be entertaining and you have to be intelligent and
it's not enough just to like be pretty.
It's really not enough. And
and you can tell in performance too, like the camera loves her and you can feel her spirit through it. Like you can tell this woman is not to be messed with, like she's scary, but like in an alluring way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So her and Brian Jones are together. Keith Richards spends a long time secretly in love with her. And so does Marianne. Marianne apparently was like totally in love with Anita as well during this time. Anita and Brian had a house together, and it became like the hangout for them two and Marianne and Keith. And they spent about 2 years together. The big issue was that they were very abusive toward each other, like physically and mentally. Keith talks about how there'd be days, and so does Marianne, about just seeing her covered in bruises, and no one ever said anything because they felt it was like their business. I guess, you know, you're young, you're 20, and you don't really know how to handle those things yet. But she gave as good as she got, and Keith says you'd see Brian walk around with black eyes, and you could hear them like, and her like throwing things at him, and they both were not very nice to each other. Not that that makes it okay, but they both equally were destructive toward one another. Keith says that he was in love with her, but he would never dream of making a move. Keith says he's never made a move on a woman ever. He's too scared to make the first move, so he waits for the women to do it.
Of course.
And he says that also because Brian was part of his band and stuff, he didn't know about how to cross that line and didn't really want to. He says sometimes Brian would pass out at their house, and him and Anita would just spend hours like staring at each other, like feeling this tension, but neither of them making a move. Finally, though, they took a trip to Morocco, and on the way, they were driving in Keith's new Bentley. And on the way, Brian had he fell ill. He ended up having pneumonia, and they basically just left him in France and went on to Morocco without him. And it's there that Anita finally put the moves on Keith. And after that, poor Brian, it was no good for him. Lost her.
What do you think about Keith? Would you have put a move on him, maybe?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Keith's probably my favorite out of all the Stones.
Why is that?
I don't know. He's just so, like, cool. And I find Mick, especially over time, he became sort of, like, phony in a way. Or like the politician of the group, you know, like, well, he has a persona.
Yeah, and he was quite a businessman. Exactly. David Bowie looked to Mick for financial advice and things like that.
I think Keith was more free and rock and roll, and didn't buy into like fame and all that the way that Mick did.
Yeah. But I mean,
they're both beautiful.
Physically?
Yeah.
You think Keith Richards is physically beautiful?
Well, maybe not so much anymore, but in the 60s, absolutely, yeah.
It's funny because I think a lot of people would probably say, like, he's a toad, you know? Like, but, I mean, if you were to see him just walking down the street without his guitar, if he wasn't Keith Richards, I'm just saying, some people might argue that Keith Richards is attractive because he's a genius. He's a Rolling Stone.
I mean, obviously,
when he plays, you see that he is, you know, but super it's talented. Like, it's one of those, you know, and I'm looking forward to doing an episode of, like, you know, men who might not necessarily be like a beauty like Mick Jagger,
the rock star thing,
or Jim Morrison
helps them,
or Josh Tillman, you know, for example, like Serge Gainsbourg, who got Jane Birkin and Brigitte Bardot. But it's a matter of like these nerdy, geeky men with an incredible talent that get the...
Oh, the talent absolutely has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I also think, though, with Keith, like when I think about him, I think about his style and like his look, if you will. And that also added to it. But yeah, I mean, if you're walking down the street.
The most kind towards women. Yes. And he was the most respectful towards women.
So. And I feel like he's the one who stayed the most like level-headed and grounded in life.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, if I were walking down the street and had to pick Mick or Keith, you're instantly drawn to Mick because he's so pretty.
And I mean, I'm sure there are people that would argue that Mick Jagger isn't attractive at all, but I don't care to know those things. Just kidding.
Okay. So Anita and Keith are now a couple. Brian tried many times to woo her back, but it never worked out. There was tension with Keith, but they did manage to finish a tour and work together on another album still. Eventually, Brian Jones found a new girlfriend. Her name was Suki Poitier. If you look her up, she is a doppelganger for Anita Pallenberg. She is so similar looking that you will still find online photos of her labeled as Anita.
Oh,
but it's
honey.
Not her. Yeah. It's unbelievable how similar they are.
I've accidentally done that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was obsessed with someone. And a musician, and I just like he like his look and his style for me was just it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I had met somebody that I guess kind of resembled him and was over at my house once, and one of my friends came over, and he looked at him and he went, "Oh hey," and then said the first guy's name, and I was like, "Oh my god!" I realized that I had also like nothing in common with this other guy that was sitting beside me. And I was like, "Oh my god! I truly only like you because you look." So, needless to say, that didn't work out.
Well,
ooh,
Brian tried. So let's move on. Things are good with Anita and Keith. She starts to do more films. She's in a couple 60s cult films, obviously, performance. One's called Candy, which I believe Pamela almost got the main role for. Oh. But Terry Southern, I think something happened where Pamela didn't get it. But I remember in her book, she talks about maybe auditioning for it or something. And she also does Barbarella.
And Lynx is wearing an amazing Barbarella shirt.
Yes.
I don't know what Barbarella is, but it looks amazing. Badass.
There's also another like rock and roll reference to Barbarella. Duran Duran get their name from the film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Anita plays the evil queen that Jane Fonda has to fight. I think Anita's called the Great Tyrant in it. She's like this black witch queen woman. She's amazing.
Great. I'll add it to the list.
Yeah. It's also around this time that, just like Angela Bowie, Anita leaves around her clothes everywhere, and Keith starts picking her clothes up and wearing them. And that's how he gets this sort of like pirate fashion kind of look that like we all know and love Keith for. It was very much Anita. It was her clothes basically, and they would just swap clothes all the time. They fit the same clothes, so why not, right?
Why not?
And Keith does give her like full credit for her influence on the style of the times too, since so many people, you know, look to their rock and roll icons and take from them. So Anita definitely had influence on the fashion of that era. So I guess the first like issue, if you will, in their relationship happens when she starts filming Performance.
Yes. And if you've seen Performance,
you'll know why.
You'll understand why.
Well, first of all, Donald Kamel, the director, was an ex-lover of Anita's. Mm. So there was that. And then, as I said, Keith says he was like a manipulator. He purposely set out to put them in situations. He basically set Anita and Mick up to have an affair on set, which is what they did. Not just on screen. They did have a thing off screen. Nick was with Marianne at the time. And both Marianne and Keith knew. Keith says he didn't know, but he knew. He knew. Like, he felt it. He must have known, because while they were having an affair on set, Marianne and Keith were having an affair of their own.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So,
might as
they,
well,
they
I
all
guess.
Just sort of accepted that it happened. I don't think, like, any of them talked about it or let it affect their relationships too much.
Yeah.
An interesting kind of Rolling Stones fact is that Keith wrote Gimme Shelter during the filming of this. Mm. And he says at the time he didn't realize the significance of the song, but he realizes now a lot of the feeling from that came from this uneasy period with Anita off with Mick and everything.
Okay, everyone, go hit pause, go listen to Gimme Shelter, and then come back.
So life goes on. They start traveling, doing lots of drugs, lots of parties. The Rolling Stones write Let It Bleed, which is one of their greatest. In August 1969, Anita gives birth to their first son, Marlon.
Oh.
Yes, Marlon Richards.
Oh.
He's sort of named after Brando, not like as a homage to him, but as it happens, Anita had worked with Marlon Brando in the movie Candy. And apparently there's this funny story about Brando trying to get with her, trying to like woo her with poetry.
So sexy.
And yeah. And it didn't work. And when it didn't work, apparently Brando tried to woo her and Keith.
Yes.
Which also didn't work. But apparently when she was in the hospital or something, Brando called and both of them were like, Marlon's a nice name. Like, let's name him Marlon. So he was inspired by Brando. And
I love Pamela's story with Marlon Brando.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just sending him just sending him pictures, leaving, like, sexy voicemail messages on his machine. And then every time she was, like, going through something, she'd just, like, call and use his answering machine as, like, a therapist.
Yeah.
And then one day he called her and he was just like, Pamela, smiling, don't hang up.
So good. Imagine just, like, having his number. Like, I think I'll call Brando today and tell him how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So great. Not much changes after Marlon is born. They're still doing lots of drugs, still traveling, touring, all that. Anita and Keith at this point are junkies. They're like fully into the heroin scene. Somehow between this time, a second child comes along, Angela. She's born in April of 72. As a family, they move to Jamaica. At this point, things start to go downhill. Anita, after years of drug abuse, and she starts to get a little paranoid and a little delusional, and incidents start happening. And apparently, when Keith was on tour, they got raided in Jamaica, and Anita was arrested, and all these things happened, but what it came down to is they let her go, but they expelled her from Jamaica, so she had to go back to London. By 75, they're, like, in deep. They're in like a dark hole, but they're still together. They're still trying. They have a third child, a son named Tara, in March of 76. Marlon's old enough now. Well, he's still young. He's like under 10. But Keith likes to take him on his tours.
Yeah, I read that. Is that in the book
Life? Yes.
That
yeah.
He mentions that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So they used to like drive together to like around Europe to the different cities that the Stones were playing in, which is so cool. Imagine like what a rock and roll life that is. Anyway, on one of these tours, when Tara is 10 weeks old, Keith gets a phone call. Apparently Tara had passed away in his crib. Mm-hmm. Obviously this is devastating. He says in his book that to this day, him and Anita have never discussed what happened or their son at all. He doesn't even know where he's buried. If he's buried, it was, I guess, too painful for both of them. Anita's like completely devastated, obviously, and she's like full-blown junkie. Things are very dark. Keith decides that their daughter Angela, who is around 4 years old, this isn't the right home life for her. Mm-hmm. So he sends her to live with his mother, and apparently she lived and was raised by Keith's mother until she was in her 20s. So basically, I don't want to say they like shipped her off and left her, but they kept Marlon and they sent her to live with the grandma.
Youch.
Yeah.
Wonder what she has to say.
I know. You don't really hear much about her. You hear Marlon talk a lot, but not really Angela.
Okay. So the song Angie is about her?
Well,
or Angela Bowie?
Keith says that he just sort of pulled the name out of nowhere. He was strumming. He says, well, when Angie was being born, he was like working on the song, but they hadn't decided to name her Angela. So he definitely doesn't say it's Angela Bowie.
Because doesn't Angela Bowie in her book say that she thought that it was a crack at her to sort of
yes,
like...
but she also credits Mick for that. So
I don't know
if she really
knew. It's a
bit
confusing.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe that's sort of how the name came to mind, but they do have a daughter named Angela, and I would assume there's some sort of tie to that more than Angela Bowie, but who knows?
Okay.
In 77, Keith, Anita, and Marlon moved to New York State. Anita is scary now. She's like very much paranoid, very much crazy addict.
Marianne as well at this point?
Yeah, Marianne's out there too. Marianne and Anita are both like junkies.
Oh, girl. Yeah, okay.
Keith in his book says, Marlon and I used to live in fear of Anita sometimes, of what she would do to herself, let alone us. I loved her dearly, but I could not make it right. She was unstoppably self-destructive. So Keith has that drug bust in Toronto, and he's just so sick of the junkie life, basically. So he's like, this is it. This is the time in my life I need to get clean. Apparently he tried many times over the years, but Anita never wanted to get off drugs. That was her life. She was happy in it. This time was no different. Keith says, I would have stayed with her probably forever, but when it came to that very important time when dope was out of the picture, from now on, she didn't stop. So for Keith to stay off, he couldn't be around Anita.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's touring and stuff, so he's not really around much anyway.
I'm having a hard enough time detoxing from sugar, let alone heroin. I probably wouldn't have stood a chance.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a good thing nobody's ever, like, I wasn't in a time where people were just, like, not.
Casually.
Like, yeah, or, like, oblivious to what heroin could really do, because I'd probably be like, yeah, sure, and then I'd be screwed.
Yeah.
Because, like,
I mean, it's easy to, like, sit back and judge, but like in the 60s, like drugs were just everywhere. Like it wasn't, there was no stigma there. It was the rock and roll life. And it's not crazy that these people were doing these things. It was just always available. And some people really liked it. You know, I'm sure there's always that good period where, you know, it makes you feel good before the dark period starts. So they separate around this time. Anita ends up having a little fling with a 17-year-old groundskeeper that was working on her and Keith's house.
Yeah, she's probably not making the wisest decisions. Probably not.
Neither is this 17-year-old, because while in bed with Anita, he decides...
Oh, I remember what happens. Okay, keep going.
He decides to play a round of Russian roulette, and he loses and blows his head off. Apparently, Marlon was in the house, and he says he remembers hearing a shot and then his mother screaming and running down the stairs, like, covered in blood.
Probably doesn't do much to help her paranoia and fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okie doke.
She was arrested, but the police figured out it was a suicide. Apparently, she picked up the gun to move it, I guess, so her prints were on it. And yeah. So after that, I think around this time, Marlon is sort of going back and forth between New York and England with his dad. Anita decides to move into New York City. Like Manhattan, and she becomes a pretty big figure in the early punk scene. She's a staple at the Mud Club, CBGB, Max's Kansas City.
Just like hanging out.
Yeah. Okay. And both Marlon and Keith say like she's not given enough credit for her influence on that scene as well. Hmm. She was hanging out with the Dolls and Warhol and Burroughs and all the important people of that scene. So apparently she had a lot to do with that. And yeah, her and Marianne are both in the city now, both like full-fledged addicts. Like it's probably the darkest period.
Best friends stick together no matter what.
Yes. Marianne has a funny story, in her book about playing, I think, the Mud Club. And before she went on, Anita said to her, like, when you play Sister Morphine, I'm going to go to the bathroom and shoot up. And she said, sure enough, she's on stage and like the opening of Sister Morphine begins and she can hear Anita like off in the background being like, that's my cue, like, you know, and like off she went.
Oh, yeah, that's cute.
So
real cute.
Yeah, I mean, at least they managed to live through this dark period and stay alive. Not many people of that time did. After a few years of this, she finally moves back to England. She manages to get clean. She becomes less of like a public figure. We know that in 1994, she graduated from Central St. Martin's for fashion.
Cool.
She got into the fashion thing for a while. You can find photos of her in the 90s hanging out with Kate Moss and all the other like famous 90s celebrities of the time, just out and about in London. And because I guess everyone knows what an influence she was.
And oh, Kate Moss is a groupie.
Yeah.
She sure is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
I can't wait to do,
absolutely.
To do
yeah,
her
she's
guys.
One
but
of,
mostly
like,
because
biggest.
Like I'm in love with Pete Doherty.
Yeah. I got a story for you then. we'll discuss that later.
Okay. Also, I just have to say before we started recording, Lings told me the most rock and roll story I've ever heard. I was so hot under the collar and I'm just like, oh, babes. That's all I can say. But
maybe one day.
That's it. You'll kiss and tell when you're ready. Yeah. But I can't wait to hear this story. So okay, continue.
All right. So You can see Marianne and Anita in this really great scene in Absolutely Fabulous, which is one of the best shows of the 90s. They played God and the Devil. It's really adorable. And yeah, they're still
You touched on that.
Best friends.
Marianne's faithful episode. Fantastic.
And Anita, you can still find her in films here and there.
Have to find a screen grab from that.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe it's on YouTube. I haven't checked, but we'll look it up. She's been in films recently. She was in Harmony Korine's movie called Mr. Lonely. He wrote the script to Kids. He recently did Spring Breakers.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Lonely is actually really interesting. It's like about a group of people on an island, and they're all impersonators, celebrity impersonators. There's like a Michael Jackson, there's a Charlie Chaplin. I believe Anita plays the queen. And they all live on this remote island together, like as their characters. It's really cute. And she was also in Stephen Frears' Cherie recently. As for her and Keith Richards, in his book, he said, Anita and I can now sit around at Christmas time with our grandkids and give each other a bemused smile. Anita is in good shape. She's become a benign spirit. She is a marvelous granny who loves gardening. She survived.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool.
I always find it interesting. So many people talk about Keith and how it's amazing he's still alive and nothing can kill him. And, you know, he partied the hardest. And then in my head, I'm always like, you clearly don't know about Anita and Marianne. Like, they partied way harder than Keith. And the fact that they're still around is incredible. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they're survivors. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. They're both wonderful. And they're still, like, best friends, too. So.
Oh, okay. You've got me. I don't even know what to say except for I loved that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. That was an incredible story. And
it was her and Marianne that really got me into...
Oh my God, that's so funny. I have another knock on my door, and this is exactly what happened.
The last time
that we recorded. It's like, who is just showing up at my house knocking on my door? Should I answer it or not? Should I hit pause?
Yeah, hit pause.
All right. So we are back in action.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where were we?
Well, it's kind of fitting. You just getting these?
Yeah, I got a package in the mail. So I got a package of two sets of angel cards that I ordered, and then of a CD that I'm actually gifting to somebody. So it's pretty rock and roll.
And Anita was sort of known, and Marianne, to like dabble in magic and mystical things, and they were very into all of this, and. Anita was sort of known, people thought she was into like black magic, and she was known as like this dark mystical
which
woman.
Is why maybe she played the devil.
And yes, absolutely. And you can see why people, she's not, you can sense something sinister in her, but not like in an evil, terrible way. But like you can, if there's ever someone that might be connected to a more spiritual world, even in performance, you can tell it would be like her, you know?
So I listened to something really interesting that kind of just reinforced this thought that we have and this idea that we have of just exploring more this kind of mystical, magical side of these women and these deities and the, you know, going towards the divine and all this kind of and all this. And it was actually from listening to the last podcast on the left, which is actually a podcast about serial killers and murder. Ooh. But they do happen to talk about, they have a couple episodes on aliens. They have a couple episodes on chemtrails. They have a couple episodes on, they have one episode on witches. And then they have one episode called David Bowie and the Occult.
Hmm.
It was amazing. And they really get into the Hunky Dory album, which is my favorite David Bowie album.
Love that album.
And then and then they were just like kind of talking about some of the lyrics and talking about some of the things he was exploring there, and in terms of like magic and almost like predicting things to come, and talking about I don't know. It was just, it gave me shivers listening to it. It was so good. But then they were talking about how people like, you know, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant, they were total friggin' geeks. Mm-hmm. And they were like into, you know, mystical lands and into these legends and into Alistair these magical.
Crowley.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then, so that's why, you know, they're attracted to these sort of witchy woman, these mystical
yeah.
women who have another sort of like answer or mm-hmm. to what they're seeking, and it's just like you have mm-hmm. it or you don't,
yeah.
you know, and it's absolutely a sense of yours or a part of yourself that can grow the mm-hmm. practice. So a lot of people, you know, experience a lot of otherworldly encounters or feelings or premonitions in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But then as they grow up and are maybe taught or, you know, they get blockages so that
yeah.
they cannot intercept messages and things like that, they lose that part of themselves. So it's something that you have to keep growing, and it's something that I do encourage with, you know, young people mm-hmm. to keep mm-hmm. themselves open and to...
That's the important thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Be open to anything.
To just be open to it. But I'm really looking forward to opening up, because I only have tarot cards. So I have probably four different sets of tarot cards, and I love reading cards, and I love the messages that we can get from that. But I've never had angel cards before, so I ordered two different decks so we can have a look at those.
Cool.
And do a bit of a reading.
I suggest, if you guys are interested in this subject, Marianne Faithfull actually has a song called Witch's Song, where she sort of celebrates that side of her and her ancestors and
yeah.
women who are open.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Stevie Nicks is an example of one of the witchiest
absolutely.
Of the.
Absolutely.
And I was, you know, watching Running Down a Dream for the bajillionth time the other day. And I was just like listening to how Stevie Nicks really, she would have done anything to be a part of the Heartbreakers. But then I read this article and Tom Petty was saying she just showed up all the time. She just put herself in front of me all the time. And then I was reading more, because there's an unauthorized, and I'm doing quotes here, biography on Tom Petty,
mm-hmm.
Written by a friend of his, but it actually goes into the fact that Tom Petty had a heroin addiction.
No way.
Right? And Stevie Nicks really helped him through that, but I'm surprised. I never jumped to this before, but...
I guess Last Dance with Mary Jane.
Stevie Nicks and Tom Petty... There was something going on there.
Oh, for sure.
There was something going on there. And for me, he is like my ultimate, you know, he's the way that he writes and the messages and the gifts that he has is nothing short. Like, it's divine.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. He's just been given this gift. And it's, even he says, you know, it's been unexplainable. Like, I don't know where this song came from. It just, and I know Keith has said these things too. It comes in dreams or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't surprise me that one of the witchiest of women would land, you know.
There's very deep roots with all of this in rock and roll. Absolutely. In most of the big name groups that we all love, Zeppelin, Stones, Petty, Fleetwood. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Thank you so much for this enlightening, entertaining, wonderful episode, and for your company as always.
Well, thank you.
Where can people listening find you online?
Well, you can find me on Goodreads. Read and write a lot of reviews on there. So please look me up. Find me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good. And that's Lynx O'Leary on Goodreads. And you can find me on Facebook, Muses and Stuff, and on Instagram, Muses and Stuff Podcast. And yeah, that's it, babes. Thanks for tuning in. I hope that you enjoyed yourself. If you want me to pull an angel card for you, just send me a message.
Oh, and go out and read Mick's book Life, or Keith's book Life, and Marianne's Faithful.
Yep, I agree.
Plenty more of Anita in there.
Okay. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.